Hello, everyone. In a few hours, it'll be 40 years since the assassination of Mrs. Gandhi, Indira Priyadarshini Gandhi, the second longest serving prime minister in Indian history, the only female thus far to hold that office, though two women have been president of India. So she is one of the colossi of modern Indian history. She was one of the most powerful women in the 20th century, and in her lifetime, she was the most powerful woman in the world, presiding over the second most populous country in the world, the world's greatest democracy. So she's gone down in history as a trailblazer. Indira Gandhi is a name that shall echo down the centuries. She achieved victory in the Third Indo-Pakistan War, and that birthed Bangladesh, and that was her zenith. She was astronomically popular at that stage, but it dissipated very quickly. Prior to 1971, India had a 4-1 numerical advantage over Pakistan. Pakistan had harbored the ambition to achieve military parity with her neighbor, which was just about possible. But when Pakistan lost the East Wing, India's numerical advantage became 8-1. And any hope of Pakistan being equal to India in military might evaporated. So Mrs. Gandhi's reputation was badly tarnished by the so-called emergency for 1975 to 1977, lasted almost 2 full years, and the Constitution of India was held in abeyance. It was the Supreme Court of India ruled in her favor and allowed her to rule by fiat. So she issued many decrees, she bypassed past parliament. She wasn't even a member of parliament while she was prime minister, so she was in no way accountable. Many peaceful opponents of the Congress Party were imprisoned without trial or charge. Habeas corpus was suspended, and IP Gandhi's dictatorial conduct led some saying to say she was more oppressive than the British Raj, which had ended only 28 years earlier. Many former Congress Party comrades of hers were interned under the same British era legislation that had been used against her during the Quit India campaign. Indeed, her former Deputy Prime Minister, Morarji Desai, he was one of those detained without trial or charge. So it was scandalous that she abused her powers in this way. And this should not be easily forgiven. And she was unrepentant about what she did, this doctrine of necessity that they got from Pakistan, saying, oh, well, because of the oil crisis. There were those who accused her of being as arrogant as Queen Victoria. Remember cartoon depicting her that way. So saying she was stratospherically conceited, power went to her head. You should read that book in Sickness and in Power by the psychiatrist Lord David Owen, a British politician, saying the longer politicians stay in high office, the greater the declension in their mental health. Not to say they're certifiable by the end, but being unable to read a room, being surrounded by sycophants and so on, believing their own propaganda. Some members of the Congress Party were disgusted. They left, set up their own Congress Party, called Congress O as an organization, but the main Congress Party is Congress I for Indira. And then there was that slogan, Indira is India, to sum up the cult of the personality. There were those who say that she misused Hindu motherhood imagery to depict herself as the mother of all and so on. Remember, by the time she died in 1984, India was only about 50% literacy. It's now like about 90%. Right, so she's born in 1917 in Allahabad, coming from a distinguished political dynasty. Her father, Jawaharlal Nehru, who was leader of the Congress Party and India's first prime minister, 1947 to 64. And of course, her grandfather, Motilal Nehru, was briefly leader of the Congress Party as well. He died in the 1930s while India was still under British superintendence. So Indira's mother was Kamala. Yes, the same name as Miss Harris, but Kamala was rather a Martha. And in 1936, Kamala died. So Indira was not quite 19 at the time. But when Indira was little, her mother gave birth to a son who died in infancy. So Indira became a rarity in 1920s India, an only child. An only child was apt to develop faster than others than children with siblings because an only child has got more exposure to adults. She was the apple of her parents' eyes. All the attention, the love and the money were lavished on her. Now, had a brother lived, we probably would never have heard of Indira, and he would have been the focus of the family's continued political ambitions, India being a deeply sexist place in the 1920s. So the Nehrus, they were a Hindu family originally from Kashmir. They'd lived in Delhi for some generations before shifting to Allahabad, which is in Uttar Pradesh. They were lax in their religious observance. Anyway, Indira, she spoke Hindi at home, but a lot of English too. So she acquired absolute mastery of that language. Now, in 1930s India, under 20% of the population were literate. Those who were fluent in English, about 2% of the population, but they were the elite. Remember, Hindi was far less widespread than it is today. It was really just spoken in north central India. It's not like today when everyone has to learn it all over the country. So the Nehrus were non-cooperators in the 1920s, as in using passive resistance against Britannic rule. So Jawaharlal Nehru, he cast aside his lucrative career as a barrister. He'd been born with a silver spoon in his mouth because his father had been one of India's most celebrated barristers. And Jawaharlal and his father were willing to suffer for the cause of Swaraj. They were ordered to pay fines for breaches of the law. And when they refused to hand over their money, the police forcibly entered their house and distrained goods to the value of the outstanding fine. And as a toddler, Indira Gandhi used to punch the policeman as they removed the furniture. So she's a fighter right from the first. Now, the Nehrus were very Britannicized. They'd attire themselves in Occidental garb for two generations. But in the 1920s, they turned their back on Western sartorial style, and they publicly burnt their British clothes. Instead, they togged themselves out in authentically Indian garments, khadi cloth. It was more than symbolic. It was part of a boycott of British industry, and Indira made a great sacrifice in solidarity with the nationalist cause when she threw her beloved British doll into the flames. Anyway, so Jawaharlal Nehru was in and out of prison a lot in the 1920s, 1930s, and he wrote to his daughter many letters from these penitentiaries. He wrote a history of the world for them, and I read them when they published his book, Glimpses of World History. Because Indira's parents, well, one was dead and the other was in prison most of the time. Well, actually, her mother only died when Indira was 18, but her mother was sickly for a lot of the time. It was decided that Indira needed to go to boarding school. So she went to boarding school in Switzerland, which became fluent in French. Now, notwithstanding the Nehru's demand for independence, they did not deprecate Britannic education, which is why Indira went to badminton school in the United Kingdom. Yes, is where the eponymous sport was invented. Then she went to Somerville College, Oxford, Somerville being one of the women's colleges of Oxford University, later attended by Margaret Thatcher. And at Oxford, Indira joined the Labour Club because the Labour Party believed that India should be granted independence forthwith. The Conservative Party was inclined to prolong Britannic superintendence of India for another few decades. Feroz Gandhi was a Parsi student at the London School of Economics at the time, active in the Congress Party. The Indian community in the UK was under 0.1% of the population at the time. It's now over 4%. Through this tiny Indian community, Indira met Feroz, and their friendship blossomed into a romance. Latin was a compulsory part of Indira's course, and she couldn't master it, so she eventually dropped out without a degree, returned to India in 1941. The Second World War was on, and she threw herself into political activism. The Second World War meant there was strict censorship, civil liberties were suspended. Anyway, Indira and Feroz decided to marry. The Gandhis were not best pleased, but their son was marrying outside the faith. To be a Parsi, one must be a Parsi of full blood. But back then, the Parsis were not an endangered species as they are today. So they married in Anand Bhavan, the Nehru's house in Allahabad, according to Hindu rites. And I've been to the house, seen photos of the wedding. From 1942 to 43, Indira was in prison for sedition, and on release, she conceived her firstborn, Rajiv, who was born in 1944. A second son, Sanjay, followed in 1946. So Indira busied herself looking after her children. Independence was imminent, but her marriage became increasingly strained, and she and her husband largely lived apart. And by the 1950s, Indira was unofficial assistant to her father, who was ailing. So in 1964, Jawaharlal Nehru died on post. He was replaced by Lal Bahadur Shastri. So Shastri appointed Indira to the cabinet. She'd only just been elected to the Rajya Sabha, as in the upper house of the Indian parliament. So Indira was elected leader of the Congress Party and therefore appointed prime minister by the president in 1966. And that was tendentious. It was on the death of Lal Bahadur Shastri, who died in disputed circumstances at the Tashkent conference, the Soviet Union, ending the second Indo-Pakistan war. But Indira becoming prime minister was not that on dynasticism. She only had 2 years of ministerial experience. Some said it was anti-republican. Many would have preferred an independence movement veteran, Morarji Desai, was very experienced. But Indira mollified people by appointing Morarji Desai as deputy prime minister. So India became closer to the Soviet Union under Indira, partly out of ideological sympathy. Moreover, she was horrified by America's presence in Vietnam. The USA had been leaning towards Pakistan even in the 1950s just to get military bases a bit closer to the Soviet Union. So India had little choice than to cozy up to the other superpower. Remember, China was not mighty in those days. So Indira, she presided over the license Raj. You had to get permission to import these things and meant to be a state-planned economy. But all this governmental control rather palsied India's economic development. So she's now castigated for her naive socialism. And her slogan, banish poverty, didn't conceal the fact that poverty remained severe and very widespread. Her son Sanjay was supposed to persuade men to go for vasectomies, but some were forced. And the Green Revolution that Indira Gandhi pursued was successful in boosting agricultural yield. India was never going to go back to famine again, which she experienced in the mid-1940s. So campaigns to spread literacy made progress. 1977, the state of emergency ended. It was supposed to be a temporary measure, but these things have a habit of becoming permanent. Some thought that Mrs. Gandhi intended to establish a permanent dictatorship. But it wasn't to be. The election went ahead on schedule. Congress has trounced, and Mrs. G suffered the humiliation of losing her Rai Bareilly seat. So the Janata Dal took over a very fissile coalition under Morarji Desai. So its components squabbled amongst themselves, and within 2 years fell apart, and there was another election. Indira was swept back into office. But in the late 1970s, Sikh separatism became a significant force. Now, this started on Indira's watch, but it got far worse in the early 1980s, backed by Pakistan. Khalistan Liberation Force took over the Hari Mandir. That's the Golden Temple in Amritsar. That's Sikhism's holy of holies. India could not tolerate a terrorist camp in the heart of a historic city. And the KLF refused to surrender. The army was obliged to use force. Indian victory was resounding in this battle. 100% of the KLF engaged were either killed, wounded, or captured. But some Sikhs saw it as a desecration. Mrs. Gandhi was guarded by some Sikh soldiers, and some of her aides counseled her to send these men away. They couldn't be entirely trusted. They might be tempted to slay her, but she said she would never discriminate against anyone on the grounds of caste, religion, race, or anything. So she was too trusting. And in 1984, she'd just been interviewed for Irish TV by Peter Ustinov, and she's walking up the garden path at her house at Safdarjung Road, Delhi, when two of her Sikh bodyguards emptied their magazines into her torso. She was rushed to the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, but even the finest physicians couldn't save her. And that was the end of her. She was cremated just days later. So her son, Rajiv Gandhi, was on a trip in another part of India. He got the news, he flew back to Delhi, and he was sworn as prime minister immediately, called a general election, and Congress romped home. So she died as she would have wished to die. She laid down her life saving her people. So in some ways, she was a magnificent political leader, but she had severe flaws. She also did wrong with the emergency, and her economic policy was illiterate, even if it was actuated by the best of intentions. So that is Indira Gandhi.